This is PCJ Radio International.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Well, hello everyone. It's very nice to have you with us for another 30 minutes of news from the world of radio and media. We begin today's program with a new radio station that went on the air November 25th in Chicago, Illinois.
Air Chicago, serving passengers of O'Hare and Midway with travel updates, plus traffic, news, sports, weather, and more. Count on Air Chicago whenever you travel at 103.5 HD2 and on iHeartRadio. Another update is coming up at the bottom of the hour on Air Chicago.
Chicago's airport information station.
Hi, I'm Rosemary Andalou.
That's right. The radio station is at O'Hare Airport, one of the busiest airports in the United States. Now, it's not unusual for airports to have radio stations. The same way with certain bridges in the United States, there could be a frequency, so you can find out if you're driving across the bridge what traffic is like up ahead of you. But this station seems to be, well, a little bit odd, to say the least. We're now joined by Dan Hensley, who happens to be a Chicago resident himself. Dan, let me begin by asking you, when did this station first launch?
On or around November 25th, 2013, just in time for the 2013 Thanksgiving air travel season.
And what kind of radio station is it? Does it only give, let's say, flight news?
Actually, it's a station made up of smooth jazz and other sort of light music that, you know, would be suitable for, let's say, air travelers. Especially given what they go through today, you don't want to have air travelers listening to things that are going to be less than soothing on their nerves. So I'm thinking that that's why they did that.
So in other words, turn their minds to mush.
Maybe, yeah. The updates at the top and bottom of every hour are not exactly what I would think travelers want to hear. And this is coming from an experienced person in the aviation travel business. You know, travelers want to hear about concourse conditions and taxiway wait times, and they want to hear about what's going on in the airport. We're not getting any of that. I mean, some of what they have is good for what it is. I'm not knocking the whole thing, but, you know, they need to really focus on if they're going to have, you know, weather and traffic and things that. Wonderful, great, but let's tell the passengers what's happening on the concourse and on the ground and in the airport itself that they need to know, things that are relevant to their experience there.
What about information, for example, on, you know, you just arrived at O'Hare Airport and you want to head into the city. Do they give out information like on what bus lines, what taxi services or limo services that are on offer?
Yeah, a lot of the kiosks now are being computerized or have been computerized, and you can use either the paper version of maps and other helpful things to get around the city, or you can use the computers there that tie into very specific helpful links for city tourists.
You know, one thing that crossed my mind when I heard about this is how many air travelers travel through airports with FM radios on them. I know, I mean, I always carry a radio when I travel, but it's something that's in my suitcase that's already, you know, in the luggage area and probably loaded onto the plane while I'm making my way to the gate.
Yeah, not very practical in that regard, but that's why they partnered with iHeartRadio, because now they know that everybody these days carries some sort of cellular device, be it an Android device or an iPhone or they're able to use cell apps for. And so iHeartRadio is reachable by cellular app now.
So effectively, this station is not just on FM, but it's also you can also listen to it through a phone app.
Exactly, or even on your computer desktop.
How wide a range does this station have? Is it only, I mean, how far do you live from O'Hare Airport, and how clear is the signal from where you are?
Well, you know, I don't have an HD receiver, and the fact is that the station is on the HD side of the band. So I can't answer that, but I do know that by using iHeartRadio is how I've been able to monitor. And so, unfortunately, until we have some actual signal reports, it's going to be hard to say.
You know, it is a little strange, because you would think that if, in the United States, for example, there are a number of bridges, let's say, that have a low-powered FM transmitter that people can tune to hear about road conditions maybe coming up on the bridge or on the other side of the bridge. They're very low-powered, but they're on FM and even some places on medium wave, which is very accessible. HD radio kind of surprises me on this.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, because I am not aware of how many people are even still aware that HD radio is even still around. I don't even know if HD radio receivers are even still being sold. I mean, it's just, it seems like a questionable move to me.
Now, the other airport in the Chicago area is Midway. Do they carry the same service, or do they have a separate one?
They have the same service.
And you said they play a lot of, kind of easy listening music. Who programs it? Is it the airport themselves, or do they have a station in the area or a network that programs it for them?
Well, the network already has a program from a pre-programmed list of songs that they feed into the transmitter through their computer system, and the computer just goes through the rotation.
And there's no announcers?
There are no announcers whatsoever, other than the recorded updates, and that's the only way I can think it's being done, is they record the updates at the top and bottom of the hour and then feed it into the transmitter, because they have no on-air personalities whatsoever.
You know, I think from a personal view, I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but I mean, if I was putting something together like this, I mean, one of the things that I would want to do is for example, you know, during the programming, you know, at every so often, you know, say, look, we have all these flights delayed, contact your airline to make sure that your flight is not delayed or if it's been rescheduled, for people, let's say, that haven't arrived at the airport yet.
Well, you know, I mean, I think they're relying on the information given to these travelers by the air crews as they taxi to the gate once they have made their arrival and they've touched down. I mean,
yeah, but you know how that is sometimes.
Right, exactly. And I can tell you, in O'Hare Airport, gates change sometimes more than anything else. And it can be, you know, by the time you get, let's say, to gate K6A, and your connection is supposed to be at gate H10, well, now your connection might be at gate K19, mm-hmm. or it might be elsewhere in the terminal. And so keeping travelers abreast of gate changes and technical downs of aircraft, which would cause either a delay or cancellation, is key. And the thing is that they're not offering that on the service. It's a fatal flaw.
You know, I have a funny little footnote, actually, of a similar experience here in Taiwan. Taoyuan Airport, which is the main international airport, they had a similar system in place for about 2 years. And something funny happened. It was just before they stopped the service. They had regular recorded announcements every 15 minutes saying flights are on schedule, everything is fine. And it was going out for about 12 hours. The problem was there was a typhoon and the airport was closed.
Absolutely.
And this stuff was going out. And what happened, they said, well, we found out that the guy that was supposed to come in to give the proper updates, he was stuck somewhere because of the typhoon. So nobody thought to fix it themselves.
Exactly. And that can be another problem with these things, even though that is a funny anecdote. And we need to have something whereby we don't just have the flight information in the terminals, and we don't just have things like FlightAware online, or, you know, if you go to flychicago.com, you can go look up flight delays and cancellations and everything going on in the airport in that regard, but we don't have it coming over an AM or FM radio system. And we really need that, especially the weather stuff, because let me tell you, I've been in that airport many a night when we've had horrible weather, and it was either short notice, not predicted, or nobody listened to the prediction that it was coming, nobody prepared, and it turned out to be such a bad situation that flights were grounded and no one was going anywhere. It became a madhouse. We've had upwards, literally, of at least 1.5 million people stranded in O'Hare Airport. All the hotels were booked up. No one had anywhere to go, and we were handing out cots and personal hygiene kits till 6 in the morning.
You know what's interesting about this? I mean, again, when I look at it, I can see this actually, if there was some type maybe of more initiative, that this actually could be a rather, you know, successful commercial venture in ways of advertising, because every airport, and I suppose O'Hare, because it is one of the major airports in the United States, there are so many businesses and so many shops at the airport that can also be taking advantage of this system to direct passengers, you know, over to their kiosk while they're waiting for a connecting flight or something.
Which makes me wonder if the executives might think of doing that as the service develops. I know O'Hare and Midway are the first to get this radio system and to have it on the air, and to see what the feedback is going to be from the public and the radio industry itself. So it'll be interesting to see if they're thinking that way, and one would hope they are.
Dan Hensley, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. We're now going to put the attention on ourselves, because this was something, well, rather odd, and something that none of us here at PCJ would have expected. Last Sunday, during our transmission of Focus Asia Pacific and the Happy Station Show, at just after 14:05 UTC, we heard something very odd.
And a very beautiful song called Existence.
Yep, you heard it. A digital burst. Now, for those who listen to the Voice of America and BBC World Service in Southeast Asia, and also East Asia, you probably have heard that towards broadcasts in English. They also affected some programming from Radio Australia and All India Radio. Well, it only happened for about 20 seconds, but then, probably about 2 or 3 minutes later, I got an email from a listener in Beijing, who was tuned to 9335 kilohertz. He said he was listening to the show, it was coming out loud and clear, like we just heard right now, but then all of a sudden, this is all he heard for the remainder of the transmission.
Sit down there, Mr. Queen. Talk about how she got interested in radio.
And that was from around 14:08, 14:09 UTC, all the way to 14:30. Now, the first digital blast that we just heard a moment ago that lasted 20 seconds was heard throughout the region. But this one, recorded in Beijing, well, it wasn't heard anywhere further than the city of Tianjin, which is around 111 kilometers southeast of the Chinese capital. I spoke to a listener in Shanghai who said our program was coming through loud and clear, and he can faintly hear that digital noise in the background. Now, at first we were thinking this could be just one of those things that accidentally happens. But on Monday night, the same listener in Beijing tuned to 9335 kilohertz and heard exactly the same thing. In fact, the jammer came on around 5 seconds before 1330 UTC and switched off promptly 5 seconds after 1430 UTC. Now, you're probably wondering, well, if they're doing this, why isn't it heard anywhere else? Well, of course, there are two types of jamming. To find out a little bit more, we're now joined by our good friend Victor Gunatelica, all the way in Sri Lanka.
We have, down the years, we have had these two types of jamming. One, of course, the sky wave jamming. We want to cover the whole country, or even from another part of the country, they would target so that the cities might get covered. And also, they were using ground wave jammers so that the jamming is restricted to an area around the jamming transmitter. They are not using curtain antennas or anything like that, but simple vertical antennas with a radiation pattern of, right around you. And they're targeting the cities and particular areas. So it's targeted jamming, Keith.
So let me ask you then, like skywave jamming, basically you're putting a jamming signal the same way as you would a transmission from a curtain antenna. It's going up to the ionosphere and then back down. With ground wave jamming, does that mean the signal is not going up, but it's just going down?
Oh, yes. Primary objective is to cover the area. You know, whether you use a curtain antenna or a vertical antenna or, just for ground wave, the signal anyhow has an area that, around the transmitter that has a loud signal. And as you go away from the transmitter, the ground wave starts falling off and the sky wave takes over after the skip distance. So if you are targeting a wide audience, like a country, a whole country, you would use a short wave and a high frequency transmissions, as you say, sky wave. But if you are targeting an area of maybe about 25-30 kilometers around the transmitter, you can very effectively do it using your ground wave, and you don't need very high power as well.
So let me ask you, if you're jamming with skywave, and let's say you want to jam a broadcast that maybe is using a 200 kilowatt transmitter, what kind of transmitter power would you need to jam that?
Well, as I said, if you are targeting a local area, a restricted small area, you don't need another 250 kilowatts. You can even have just run 10 kilowatts. And, because just close to the transmitter, the signal will be phenomenal. So if you are, for instance, targeting a city, a couple of low-power transmitters placed very effectively will cover the whole city, maybe less than 100 kilowatts, and you can have 10 kilowatt transmitters and you cover the whole area.
So what you're effectively saying is that if you're doing ground wave jamming, you really don't need the same amount of power as you would with sky wave jamming.
Oh, definitely. Definitely not.
Now, the...
Right here in Sri Lanka, I'm not hearing the jamming. And even in India, for instance, and Southeast Asia, most of our listeners are not hearing the jamming, which is intense in Beijing. And I think you told me in Shanghai, some of the one or two of the big cities. So it really appears that this is targeting ground wave. And otherwise, if they were using a sky wave, if they wanted to knock out, from some other part of China to beam so that Beijing area will be covered from a sky wave, then, of course, out here in Sri Lanka and our listeners outside China would have picked it up like they do when they jam BBC, for instance, or Voice of America. They are targeting the whole country, I think. So in this case, it appears that they are restricting themselves to the city, maybe Beijing. Maybe we might start hearing more severe jamming as we go along.
Well, it was very strange because I was in contact with somebody in Shanghai, and they said faintly they can hear the noise in the background. Very faintly. Very, very faintly. In Hong Kong, there was nothing at all. And here in Taiwan, I couldn't hear anything at all. But then I had like the clips that we just listened to a moment ago. Somebody recorded for me in Beijing, and I can tell that PCJ is right there in the background because yes, I knew the content that was going out at that time, but it was just completely blanketed. Now, let me ask you, because, you know, China, there's different forms of jamming. There's noise jamming. There's echo jamming, where they'll put a program on with a very severe echo. And then, of course, the what people call the fire drake, which is the traditional Chinese music.
Chinese opera.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're jamming, let's say, on ground wave, would you put out a different type of audio than, let's say, if you're jamming skywave?
Well, no. Whatever you do, well, it's just a selection, what you select, what you want to use as the jamming signal. And you nowadays, the digital signal appears to be very popular with China, just like in the old days, they were using diesel-generated noise, which became, the Chinese came up with the opera, Chinese opera, which some people like to call a fire drake. So the Chinese keep, innovating. They have great ideas for jamming. And one more thing, just because you are using low power your idea is to have a restricted area ground wave jamming, it doesn't mean that your signal will be restricted to ground wave. And some of the signal, of course, definitely will get into the ionosphere, and people will hear it further away, and there'll be a dead zone as well. So the signals, the weak signals you are hearing in Shanghai, for instance, could be very well a little bit of the sky wave. Sky waves from Beijing that's carrying right on to Shanghai.
You know, it's interesting because I found, it was a couple of years ago, on the website for the Broadcasting Bureau of the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which oversees all international broadcasting from the United States, they had these plans to with your radio fix something so you can actually go around jamming, and we actually have it posted on the PCJ website if somebody wants to take a look at it and build it themselves. And I built it, and believe it or not, with stations, let's say, like Sound of Hope or other Chinese programs that are targeting China that are jammed, it actually is rather effective, but I have a feeling that with Groundwave, it wouldn't be effective at all.
No, if you have a very strong ground wave transmitter, jamming close by, whatever you do, it'll be so strong that it'll completely blanket it out. Listen to a local AM station, which is just about a few kilometers away. It'll be so strong, it'll kick your S meter right up to the end, NPEG signal, and you wouldn't get anything, whether you turn your antenna whatever way you want, because the signal is so close and it almost engulfs the whole frequency right around you, and it'll spread a couple of frequency kilohertz as well. So if you have a close by transmitter which is used for ground wave jamming, it'll be very, very difficult to get away from it.
Thank you very much, Victor Gunatelica, our frequency manager, speaking to us from his home in Sri Lanka. By the way, the noise that you heard in the background there was not interference coming over Skype, but was actually frogs in Victor's garden. Papua New Guinea is one of Australia's closest neighbors. Well, recently, the permanent correspondent for APP, that's Australian Associated Press, left Australia. It now leaves only one media outlet with a journalist based in the capital, Port Moresby, and that is Radio Australia. To find out what it was like covering PNG and why they pulled out, our good friend Richard Eady spoke to the last correspondent there, Eoin Blackwell.
Pretty much the day I arrived, my fiance got horrible food poisoning, and then a British-Australian man, John Holtz, was shot and killed just near Port Moresby. And that was my first story when I arrived, covering that. And then I think it was just 2 days after that, there was a change of government. Sir Michael Somare was, of course, dumped by Parliament, and Peter O'Neill took charge, and it was pretty much a year and a half to 2 years of politics from then on.
Right, so it was a very intense beginning.
Yes.
And did you think, oh my God, what have I got myself into?
more than once, yeah, a few times. I had, I had a few experiences that I've never had in Sydney. I had four guns put in my face, three of them by people doing their jobs. my partner escaped a carjacking, you know, so it was always on, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, even going out, you know, I got to know people around my community in Ella Beach quite well and things like that, and kind of felt at home at the end. But whenever you left your house in Port Moresby, you always had your wits about you. And
I would imagine that becomes, well, a partly habitual, but also tiring.
Yes, yeah, very tiring. Your own ABC correspondent, Liam Fox, talks about the violence in PNG, and it is everywhere. There's a casualness about the violence. You'd see things that you just wouldn't see in the streets in Sydney. Mm. I mean, I went to pay an internet bill one day, and a taxi driver jumped out of a car with a machete, ran towards me, and then jumped up in a truck and tried to stab the truck driver, and the truck driver knocked him off a few times and then just pulled a gun on him. And you're just, I was just sitting there in the car next, just kind of next to them, just watching this happen, going, okay, now I'm off to pay my internet bill. But then there are other, I mean, domestic violence, as we all know, is a huge problem in PNG. And then that's being covered. You know what I mean? Like violence against women is now more likely to be in the newspapers than it was a few years ago, whereas casual acts of people pointing guns at each other, you know, not necessarily. It's just a Tuesday afternoon.
Did you file every day?
No. And I'd say much to my my boss's chagrin, I tried, but there are very realistic problems with reporting in Papua New Guinea. Geography, infrastructure, you know, phones don't go everywhere. Facts and figures, you'll get them. You'll think they're correct and stake your career on it and then have it just slip away.
So you, how did you...
Well, you feel like you're on quicksand a lot. I mean, you get facts and figures. You say you're in Port Moresby and you hear a story of someone being killed in another part of the country or some disaster where people are killed. The initial figures, even the figures you settle on, you can never be quite certain that you're being 100% accurate.
Did you work kind of alongside the local media?
Yeah, there's a very peculiar convention in Papua New Guinea where the local press defer to the Australian press in a way, which when we're at press conferences and such, they either look to myself or the ABC to, you know, for questions first. In some way, they'd wait until we were gone before they asked. And that was something that, you know, made me realize how important it is being a journalist there. But there was one incident, though, where I... a ridiculous thing during the crisis where Peter O'Neill had held a press conference at the government offices, Murata House, to declare that he was firmly in charge of government. And we waited for 4 hours for that press conference. And then just as we got home, Sir Michael Somare called to say that he was giving a press conference from inside the same building and that he was prime minister. And at this stage, I think it filed like 20 stories that day. This was in the heat of the impasse. And, I drove back the 20-minute drive back to Murata House from my apartment. It was about 6 in the evening, and I think it was starting to rain, and I had my laptop and all these bags around me and went upstairs where Somare and his cabinet were meeting, and I burst through the door, and I tripped, and I put my fists on the desk, and I said, "Who is in charge?" And Sir Michael and his cabinet gave me a lashing, and then the Papua New Guinean journalist then started asking questions in Pidgin, which is something I never experienced. That was the only time. It just showed at the time how heated things were, you know, and there was me, big clumsy idiot, tripping over and telling their first prime minister who was in charge. So that was it. Yeah, that was one of the most interesting press conferences I've been to.
I'm sure.
Ewan Blackwell, the Australian Associated Press correspondent in Papua New Guinea, who's left. And with that, we've come to the end of the program. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies. Thank you.